I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 544. I have to admit, my butt was immersed.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm alive, so that's a plus.
Hey, I am also in the living, so winning?
Winning? Living is winning.
Something like that.
Sure.
That sounds
about right.
I'm still not done with this stupid virus, but I'm coughing a lot less, so it'll be easier on our editor this week to actually produce the podcast, because that was a little rough from last week with all my coughing. I've hurt my back, though, from coughing.
You are just so a series of unfortunate events. I am
Lemony Snicket. That's what I am. And it's always in the summer. Like, I'm like, oh, the weather's nice. Now I can go outside. And my body's like, nope. Because you're broke. Here, have this flu. By the way, here's a touch of bronchitis. Oh, you thought you could walk? Let me mess up your foot. Ha ha. You stuck inside. Look at all the children's playing outside. So you stay inside. Okay, well, then I guess I'll game. No, you won't. Fever. Yeah, that's my life. That's my life. But I'm not feverish anymore.
So that's
so
good.
So I've actually gotten to play some games, which is kind of funny that it took being sick for 3 weeks to get me to a point where I could play games. And actually had time to play the games, to enjoy the games. So I've been playing some games, which is nice. And catching up on anime, too. So I got some anime to talk about. I got some games to talk about. And I think you also have something to talk about as well, Panda.
I do have something to talk about. Do you want to go first, since I kind of monopolized last week's show a little bit?
I'll go first, but, you know, Monopoly is good, and I usually go first. So I will be player one again this week, but
all right.
I'll let you be player one again soon.
Okay.
How about that?
That's fine.
Okay. All right. So the first thing I want to talk about is, like I said, I've been playing some games while I've been down for the last couple of days. And what I've been doing is actually taking advantage of Xbox's Game Pass service. And if you're not familiar, Game Pass is basically a service that you can pay $9.99 a month for. And you can opt in, opt out whenever you like. And Xbox makes available a bunch of games. Mostly 360, but also some Xbox One games. The 360 games are compatible, are games that are back compatible on your Xbox One. So every game that's there, you can play on your Xbox One. But you can, for $10 a month, play any of these games. And you can play them for as long as they're in the Game Pass library. So it's kind of an interesting way to be exposed to some games that maybe you hadn't been exposed to before. You know, because there are a lot of people that the Xbox One or the Xbox One S is their first Xbox game, is their first Xbox system. So they didn't get to play any of the games that were on the 360. So they may not know just how great and fun Perfect Dark is, as an example, you know?
Right.
And so I thought it was interesting because the lists are curated. But there's, you know, family-friendly games as a group you can explore. And there's about, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 15 to 20 solid games in that group. So, like, Idarb is in there. The Blob is in there. You know, some games that, again, are family-friendly. and our multiplayer so that, you know, families can play together. There's the action RPG group, so, you know, all of your games like that are thrown into there. So that's where you'll find, you know, action titles like Hitman and Assassin's Creed, and then, you know, your RPG types, so your Fable 3s and, you know, the like. And again, on the 360 side, these are games that are back compat. And as I started scrolling through the lists of the games that are there, and those aren't all the lists, guys. There's the A through Z list, so if you just want to see alphabetically everything that they have in there, there's a bunch of games. A bunch of the Banjo-Kazooie games are in there. Layers of Fear is in there, so there's some titles from ID at Xbox that are in there. They even have I don't think they call it Incredible Indies, but I think they call it Awesome Indies channel, which are the awesome independent games that are on the platform. Brothers was in there. So I really spent some time like going through the lists, and there's a chunk of games in there. And if, you know, you just now are picking up an Xbox, or if you've decided that you're going to pick up an Xbox this holiday season and get an Xbox One X, Games Pass is a pretty solid thing to look at to get exposure to a bunch of games, because they're downloadable, so you can play them right then and there. And like I said, for as long as they're in the Games Pass library, you can play the games. And if you want to, let's say that, you know, you grab the game and you like it and you want to actually own it, you can. You can go right through the store and just buy it and have it permanently be part of your library. But I think that it's very interesting in looking at how successful things like, you know, EA Access are on the platform, and other subscription-based service for streaming media, on-demand stuff. I think that it was smart of Microsoft to go, hey, we should find a way to make these games available to people, because not everybody has the discs for these games to throw it into their boxes to have them. You know, that the way that back compatibility right now works on Xbox One is you have to take your physical 360 game disc, if it is a game that is on the back compatible list, and put it into your system for your system to then download the digital back compat version to your Xbox, and then you can play it. And that's how you prove that you have the right to the game, because you have the physical disc. Well, over time, a lot of people traded in their 360 games for new games on other systems or new games on the Xbox One system, so they don't have those discs anymore but would love to play those games again. I think for $10 a month, and you don't have to lock in for like 3 months or 6 months or whatever, you can just do a single month if you want to try it.
Okay.
You have a 14-day pass that you can trial that you can do for free that's available. So you can simply go log into the dashboard, go straight to Games Pass, and you can start a 14-day trial. So, you know, for most people, I think for Games Pass, all you really need is 2 weeks to determine like whether or not this is going to be something that you want, because they're going to keep adding to the games library every month. And you're going to have things that are going to be in the library and things that will cycle out of the library after time. You know, I think that it, and I want to be very clear here, Game Pass is not the same or in any way connected to Xbox Live Gold. Okay, so if you're going to do Gold, which is a subscription that gets you to the 3 free games a month that change and deals with Gold and lets you do your multiplayer online, that is separate from Games Pass. But I think that Games Pass is probably a really good thing for anybody that is coming onto the Xbox new, that didn't have a chance to play some of these games that are on the 360, that'll be coming back by way of Game Pass, the 360, to you fresh. And I think it's good for anybody who had a bunch of 360 games that they traded in, pointing at myself, and no longer have those discs, but would like to be able to play some of those games again on their current system. You know, all the Gears games are available. I shouldn't say all. I can't remember if I saw Judgment. I might not have saw Judgment. And you know what? That's probably okay.
I think that's perfectly okay.
Don't make me laugh so hard. That's probably okay. But you're going to see a good chunk of games come through. They've got a shooter section. Like, I do think that it's very diverse. And I will say that, in full disclosure, I was given a year of Games Pass by Microsoft to review and spend some time in. And so that's what I'm using right now. Okay. And I thank them for giving me that. But full disclosure, they did give it to me. In all honesty, if they hadn't given me the year, I definitely would have done the 14-day trial because I was already looking at it because I saw potential in there being some of the old 360 games that I had probably coming to the library at some point, and I would definitely want to play them. And I don't play them now because I don't have those discs anymore. And so I do think that Games Pass, if you're getting a system for the holiday and you've never been on Xbox before, it's probably going to be worth getting Games Pass at least for a couple of months, just so you can see what other games are available for you to play. Because there's a good chunk of games out for the Xbox One. Okay, now. When it first came out, not so much. But now, there's a lot of really good games and indie games for the Xbox One. But it's kind of nice to have a place where you can go where things are curated in a group for you. That you can just play. You know, it reminds me, like, of demo days. And it feels like you're paying $10 a month to basically try before you buy.
I mean, I think in now where people want to have that exposure before they commit to spending their money, like, that seems like a wise direction if you ask me.
You know, I full on expect that you'll have pretty much everything that's in the back compatibility library right now at some point in time will be available via Games Pass to play. And that's a big chunk of games that you can have access to. You can play right now. And there's a lot of value in that. You know, I look at the PlayStation Store sometimes, and I look at, you know, the rental system there, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. It just seems like I'm putting, like, out a lot of money and probably not getting a whole lot of bang for that buck. Here, I feel like I'm getting decent bang for the buck, but still not great bang for the buck, right? Because, like, you don't know how long games are going to stay in the Games Pass library. It could be a month, it could be 3 months, it could be 6 months. You know, for some games, it might take you a month to get through. And, you know, if you're through it and you're done with it and you want to get rid of it off your Xbox, it's cool. But, like, for me, I know that there are some games that it does really take me, like, 2 months to get through just in the amount of time that I have to play the game. Right. And if it disappeared after a month, then I'm kind of locked into either waiting for it to come back into the library or having to buy it outright. So, like, that's, like, the only, like, place where I could see, like, any kind of frustration with the service is if there was a game that was, like, short-lived. There will be a notification in the Games Pass Dash that'll tell you, like, expiring soon or leaving the library soon, so you know when something is getting ready to go. So you won't be surprised by it. You know, you're like, you won't go to sleep one night with your save intact and then wake up the next morning and it's like, hey, if you want to keep playing, you gotta buy it now because it's gone from the Games Pass library. Like, you won't have that. You'll have plenty of knowledge of when it's going, but, like, that's the only, like, for me, at least, downside I can see to Games Pass. And again, it is $10 a month. So, you know, if you're already paying for Live and you're paying for EA Access, you know, adding another subscription onto it might not make a lot of sense for you. It really just depends on the game. So what I recommend for everybody is take a look at Games Pass, because you can see all the games that are currently available in the library right now before you even start the trial. And check and see if there are games that you're interested in or maybe you've never heard of. Because there's quite a few games that I had never heard of that are in some of these collections that I might take a look at now. Because again, I get to because of this $10 a month. But take a look at the games. And my rule is always the same. If there's at least three that you would want to play right now, that's worth the $10 a month for you to be able to play them right now. Like, if you were to go to a store and buy those games used, you'd spend way more than $10. So check it out. And if there's three or better, you should give Games Pass a try. And if not, then just wait until there are. There may never be three games for you, you know, because you may already own most of those games or played them and you're done and you're past that. But take the three game rule, take a look at it, and determine if, like, it's a fit for you. I'll be honest with you, I'm probably going to get much more use out of Games Pass than I really expected to. More than likely, if you've paid attention to our social, you probably heard by now that I said that I'm going to be streaming games on Mixer starting next month. And it's because of Games Pass, because I'm going to be picking up some some games from Games Pass, and I'm just going to stream them randomly on Mixer. And hopefully you guys will tune in and let me know if you're enjoying it, and we can have a good time. It's because it's going to give me access to a whole bunch of games, because I'm not buying games like I used to, you know. My tastes are expensive, and so when I...
At least you know
it's true. But it's true, though. When you look at how games are coming out now, like, everyone's glossing over just the, here's the game. Now it's the game plus the season's pass, the game plus the this extra DLC, the collector's edition. So it's not a $60 game, because if you want good bells and whistles, you're in $80 or better range. Do you want the collectible items? Do you want the maps? Do you want to be able to see all the things of the things? Okay, well, that's $119 then. Or you can just get the game. It's like, get the game is like, well, if you're poor, do this. Oh, you don't want to ball out of control? Well, I guess you can do this. Like, it's the consolation prize. And I've noticed that's really been happening with games over the last 6 months, is everyone comes out and touts the game and like, yeah, and you can get the Super Mega League blah, 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 Collector's Edition. That comes with all these extra bullets and this armor, which you would need to spend like 15 hours in the game to get. And also these maps and this hard book. And you also get this tin for the game and the game. And you're like,
do I need okay, that?
But what if I just want the game?
Like,
and you gotta, like, dig in a way, way, way at, like, the bottom of the page. It's like, okay, and here's just the game disc. And with that, you get just the game. It's like they're underselling the game and overselling all the bells and whistles and additions to get you to buy those additions.
I mean, in the market that we're in right now, that's kind of the trend. So if you want to make above, like, if you want to make some serious profit...
No, you're already making serious profit. It does not take a lot of money. It does not cost a lot of money to press... discs, okay? So at $60, you're already making beaucoup de profit, okay? Like, unless you're Ubisoft and you're going way over on your marketing, you're already making anywhere between 25 to 30% profit off of box disc sales.
Yeah, but why settle for 30 when you could have 50?
Settle for 30. See, this is the problem. Settle for 30% profit.
Why settle when I can have more?
Because you still have to print up and make all that other stuff. There's costs involved in making that other stuff. So then your margins for having to make profit become even larger because you have all this extra ish.
But I got dumb resources that just have money to burn.
Yeah, that's the thing. Burn. Burn that money. But anyway.
Look, I still take kids and don't have jobs.
Yo. Look, I've fallen for it. I've bought many a collector's edition.
Yeah, I
okay?
know.
When Ubi announced that ballin'-ass, out-of-control Assassin's Creed collection, you know, the one that everyone's like, oh, guys, you put the decimal in the wrong place. I think you meant to say $79.99, not $799.
No.
And they were like, no. No, the decimal's in the right place. And everyone was, like, losing their minds. I'm like, guys, did you look at that collection? Okay, first of all, that is not meant for us mere collectors, okay? That run is meant really for the ballin' out of control fans, okay? With all the stuff that's in there, like, you gotta really be an Assassin's fan to want that box. Plus, it's all really high quality stuff. The statue is fucking amazing. I got to see it when I was out at E3. Like, it's worth $800, so don't bitch if you don't have that money, because you ain't gonna get it.
So, yeah.
It's not meant for you. That's not for you. You need to take a couple steps down. Y'all need to be looking at that $119, $179.99 collector's edition. Oh, but it doesn't have the bomb-ass statue. Right, because the bomb-ass statue is expensive.
Duh.
But don't get it twisted. Like, I want... desperately that Assassin's Creed collectors it because I want the statue. Not gonna get it, but I want it. Okay, so, I mean, they did their job right because I want it. And there have been a lot of collector's editions that I've seen that I'm like, meh. Don't really want it, I'll just get the game. Don't really want it, I'll just get the game. And then at the point where I'm like, oh, I'll just get the game. I want to get it digitally. I'm like, I don't need the discs. Like, the only thing I need the discs for is to update my disc wall that you guys will see when I'm, maybe you'll see when I'm doing streaming. I haven't determined the other yet. whether or not I'm going to have camera on me or not when I stream. Might just be game. But when we do our YouTube videos, you will probably see us. I'll probably record us sometimes. Anyway, all I'm saying is don't undersell the game, okay? The game is the value. The stuff that you put around it extra is just the cherry on the top. And I like cherries, but cherries aren't the only thing, okay? The thing is the ice cream, okay? The thing that makes a sundae for me is not the whipped cream and the cherry on top. It's the ice cream that's underneath. That's all I'm saying. Don't make the game the redheaded stepchild. Like, that's not cool.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing it happening more and more. Okay, so that was one thing that I wanted to talk about, Games Pass. The next thing I wanted to talk about is Doomfist.
I've heard very little about Doomfist, so.
Okay, so Doomfist is available in Overwatch, so you need to fire up your Overwatch, get that update, get that Doomfist in. Terry Crews is not the voice of Doomfist. I am so sad by this. You had one job, Blizzard. You had one job.
Get Terry Crews.
Okay, that's like all you had to do, okay? Because as you know, Panda, I'm not the biggest Blizzard fan.
But I know you're not. You have this weird animosity towards Blizzard, and I can't.
I wonder why. Oh, you can't remember? You don't remember?
It was so long ago, sis. You gotta let it go. I haven't touched a Blizzard game since Overwatch.
Okay, but I will say this: I enjoy Overwatch. Not to the addiction levels.
I haven't gotten addicted to a game in a very long time. I'd say my closest addiction to date is Zelda Breath of the Wild. And I haven't even gone back because of the DLC. I've been very good.
Yeah, I am still on the camo because I haven't played since E3.
It's okay. It will still be there when you get back.
Yeah, that Ganon will still be there whipping my ass when I go back. You had one job. Because I do enjoy Overwatch a lot. I don't play it regularly. And like I said, I don't play it to the level that some people play it. Like, every once in a while, I'll pop in and I'll get matched up with people who are, like, rank 73. And I'm like, how the shit does that even happen? Like, how much do you play?
Commitment.
You that good?
Commitment, son.
I'm like, woof. If I ever make it to 20, I'll be like, damn, I did something. Especially because of the rate that I play. But I really enjoy the game. And it's a fun, you know, I can pick up now and be like, woo! And then be done for a little bit. And I like games like that I don't feel like I have to go back and play it. Or I'm going to be too far behind anybody else. One, Doomfist looks awesome in the game. Built brother with massive gold arm. You know, the Doomfist.
Yeah.
Really from, you know, the character art that we saw drawn to what he actually turned out to be in the game. They did a fantastic job with him. I suck playing as Doomfist, but I love playing as Doomfist. He's just so over the top, like, fun. And everybody kind of went Doomfist crazy. And you just see, like, people in chat being like, I was going to be Doomfist. Because, you know, they limit how many of the same character you can have on a team.
Yeah.
You know, so that you don't have people just picking all Bastion teams.
Because that's just a team.
You can't beat an all Bastion team. There's no beating an all Bastion team.
They be Bastion you in the face.
Correct. And they realize that. So, good on you, Blizzard. Be like, nah, y'all can't do that. Stop that.
Stop being
no
petty.
All Bastion
take
teams. All Hanzo teams. Just stop. Stop it.
Stop it right now.
I'm not gonna let that happen. And I appreciate you, Blizzard, but come on now. You have one job. Get Terry Crews. And Terry wanted the job. It wasn't even like he didn't want the job.
Why did they give him the job then?
Okay. Like, you could give him the job, but no. You didn't get Terry Crews, but you know who did get Terry Crews?
America?
Crackdown.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, because Terry Crews is the lead agent in Crackdown. They did that reveal at E3.
See how he would have a confliction of interest.
It's voice acting. Mm-mm. Take 2 weeks.
Ugh.
Just voice acting. It's not like they were doing a whole story. They were just doing a new character introduction.
Oh, okay.
Boom, done.
Bye.
Right, because it's not like we're talking like voice acting that you need for like an Uncharted where you have all this dialogue. Like you have a couple of the, you know, the prologue stories. And then you have the winning phrases and some of the reactions in-game. Then you're done. So, like, voice acting for Overwatch is not as heavy as, like, a heavy narrative game where you're the only character. Doomfist is, like, one of, what, 25 characters now?
Right.
30 characters? I can't even keep up. Like, so it's not heavy voice acting. And there's not a real big conflict because they're completely different games. But, like, Blizzard, you had one job. Like, because if anybody is perfect for Doomfist, it's Terry motherfucking Crews. But that's okay. It's all right. We got him in Crackdown. But it just, I'm just saying, Blizzard, like, you let me down. I just needed that. I just needed that thing this week. And you couldn't even help a sick girl out. Yeah, sad.
Nope.
That's okay. That's all right. It's cool. It's cool.
It could be worse, bro.
It could be worse. You know, I still am going back and forth on the new voice actor for Kratos in the new God of War game.
He's an older man now.
I know. I know.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Take a deep breath. Hug your pillow. Your snack. So that when you get angry, you don't take it out on this voice actor because it's not his fault.
No, he's just doing his job. They were like, hey. We got a job for it. And he was like, great, let me suit up.
Great, I'd like to pay for food for my family and my livelihood. You know, that'd be great.
And, I mean, that's, I'm not knocking it. All I'm just saying.
Is you got to adjust to the change. Like, it's a growth. Right. There's a growth.
Right. That has to happen. It's got to grow on me.
It's got to happen naturally at your own speed.
Because it's different. It's different.
I get it. I get it.
That's all I'm saying. It's different.
I get it.
That's all. That's all. That's all I'm saying. That's it. That's all I got. I'm gonna stop there. I'm gonna let you talk.
Okay.
And then if we have time, I'll talk about Allison Zeroku.
Most people and their mamas and their grandmamas.
And their grandmamas' mamas.
Got to see Spider-Man Homecoming. Which, I was really excited about it because it happened during my birthday week, and I'm always very excited around my birthday. I'm just going to state that
right now. Are you still, like, pushing your birthday?
No, I'm done now, but
I don't feel like you are.
I was excited for this movie to fall in that week. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. I was like, oh, man, yeah. But, like, we were worried that we weren't be able to actually get tickets to see it. But we actually got to see it in IMAX in 3D, which I actually think really does elevate the movie a bit. So, John Watts directed this version of Spider-Man. I know people are conflicted over whether or not this is a Sony movie versus a Marvel Studios movie, and they kind of did it together, so I still see it as a Marvel Studios movie, even though Sony was kind of the first screen that we saw during the
Yeah, it's a Marvel movie.
But everyone was like, no, it's a Ready? Sony movie. It's a Sony
did it,
movie.
Did it suck?
No.
It's a Marvel movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely did not suck. It rang some nostalgia for me, which is really weird because this is obviously a younger Spider-Man than me because he's 15 in the movie and I'm 33 now. So, but like, I think his nuance and his look, his outlook on life is very similar to me. So like 15-year-old me was all about him, like Drool City. But that's just me. I digress. But right off the bat, you know, you got your little sliver of this particular Spider-Man in Civil War. And everyone lost their shit because they're like, yes, this is a Spider-Man that we want, we deserve. Like, this should have happened forever ago. Hip, hip, hooray. And now, you know, Homecoming is definitely this Spider-Man's origin story. And they took some liberties that I think some people during the initial production were a little concerned about. Because there was the rumors about Zendaya being Mary Jane and people's panties got in a big wad over that. And then like, no, that's not her name. Her name's Michelle. And she's like, not Mary Jane. Which granted, I would have been fine with it if she had been. Because, you know, I think it would have opened up, I think, the comic book world to get away from the redheads a little bit, like spice it up a little bit. I like me some paprika, but sometimes you need some brown sugar, you know what I'm saying? Like every once in a while you need to sweeten the pot a little bit.
I mean brown sugar.
Right.
Why do you taste so good?
Right. So
Mick Jagger knew what was up.
And I think they actually, I think they finally, like, listened to all, like, the whispers of that, because in Homecoming, Peter is really obsessed with this girl named Liz, who's a senior, and she's, you know, chocolate and gorgeous and very kind of nerdy and, you know, is popular, but doesn't rub it into everybody else that she's popular. Like, you know, like the unicorn that we all wanted in high school. Like, we wanted the popular mm-hmm. person to have a heart of gold and actually see us, and then they didn't, and that was okay because it was life. But, I mean, this is a movie, so you know this isn't life. But he's, like, obviously attracted to Liz, and so is practically everybody else. And, like, I kind of liked that the direction of that, because usually you see it the other way around, so I liked the play on this. And it was just... It was so well established, like, the universe. And they didn't make, you know, because, I mean, it's great that they had Marissa Tomei in there as Annie May. But, like, they actually, she didn't get nearly as much screen time as I think the trailers kind of led you to believe that you'd see.
And she shouldn't, because it's not the story of Aunt May.
No, but, I mean, but they took a different approach with this, too, because, I mean...
Hey, you know, look, Marissa Tomei has been bait to get people to watch movies for years.
So...
Because I see Marissa Tomei and was like, obviously, I need to see that. And then my wallet was like... Obviously, you ain't seeing shit. And I was like, yes,
you won't see it right now. You'll see it later.
I was like, yes, Mr. Wallet.
But I mean, like I think in the original Sam Raimi movies, like, Tobey Maguire just seems really kind of, you know, he's phoning. I think for me, I always thought that those Spider-Mans, like, he was phoning in his, you know, need to protect Aunt May. And then when you get that sweet granny-looking woman to be your Aunt May, like, of course you want to protect this silver-haired, you know, super soft, like, grandma-faced woman. Like, who wouldn't? So, you know, you're just kind of...
You kind of have to be a monster to not.
Exactly. So, like, the fact that I felt like he had to reach to sympathize with this woman, I'm like, you're clearly a lizard person. Because, like, they're giving you everything you need to feel sympathy and that strong sense of protectiveness of this woman, and I still don't feel like it's genuine. And in Homecoming, I felt it. Like, Tom Holland, you know, when he's talking to his, like, best buddy, sidekick guy, comedic relief guy, about, you know, I really don't want to upset Aunt May about stuff. Like, I just don't. She's just been through a lot, man. And, like, his friend's, like, not getting it, and, like, he's trying to hammer it in that he's, like, really not trying to fuck shit up. And, like, finally, his friend's like, okay, dude, like, I get it. And I'm like, I don't think you get it, but I, like, the audience got it. Like, how protective Peter is of Aunt May. I mean, the ensemble I thought was great. Like, they had such a great cast in this movie. I find that there's some irony in all of it because, you know, when you get... when you get... you get Michael Keaton... to do a movie called Birdman where he was, like, a superhero on a show and then couldn't escape the mentality of the Birdman. But then you put him in Spider-Man Homecoming as the Vulture, where he's now actually a Birdman and a villain. Like, I the nuance in all of that makes me giggle a lot. Like, I don't know if anybody else... It finds it as funny as I do. Like, do you?
I haven't seen the movie, so...
Well, haven't you seen... You've seen the trailers with Michael Keaton, right?
No.
Oh, well...
I specifically didn't watch trailers because I...
Oh, well...
Didn't want the movie ruined for me in any way.
Oh, well...
So... He's thanks.
He's the...
Yeah, like, I have not seen a single trailer for this movie.
I don't know how you couldn't because it's everywhere.
I specifically, when I would see it, be like, nope, just move away from that page or move away from that feed and not look at it.
I'm not giving away anything that anyone who hasn't seen the trailer wouldn't get, but I just, knowing that Birdman came out, like, last year with Michael Keaton in it, like, I was just like, that's really kind of...
Yeah, but have you actually seen it? Because if you saw it, that movie's not...
I heard it's quite heavy, like, it's really about, like, his...
No, it is. It's dark and it's heavy.
Right. So like, I find the light humor in the fact that they did that.
That he's played Birdman twice.
He's
last year.
In the last year.
I'm sure that has not fallen on deaf ears for him either.
I can't, I wonder, I'm sure interviewees were like, do you feel like you were prepared for this because of Birdman? I'm sure he's like, no, like clearly not. But it's not lost.
I'm sure that probably aggravates him more than anything else
in the universe, probably. The universe feels very lived in. It feels really real. Like, because sometimes when you get these comic book movies, like, you know, they're trying to adhere to the feel of the comic book world. And I think sometimes that doesn't translate very well on screen, or unless you have a really good, solid team that really understands both media.
More times than not, they run completely in the opposite direction of the comic book, though.
Yes. And I mean, I think that's because, one, they have to put
their X-Men movies.
They have to put their Hollywood glitter on it because they have
to. They choose to put
because if they want everybody and their grandma and their grandma's grandma to go to the movie.
Wonder Woman proves that you don't have to put your Hollywood on it to make it good. And for everybody and their mama and their mama's mama.
How long did it take DC?
I'm just saying, I'm playing devil's advocate here.
I know.
They actually don't have to.
Okay.
And can still be successful.
So.
And we have a proven.
So, I mean.
Case.
Long story short. Overall, like.
Go see Spider-Man.
You walk out of this movie going, hell yeah. Like, you're just about it. Like, you're just like, I prescribe to everything that's happening in this. And, I mean, going back to the whole Zendaya, Mary Jane tidbit, because I think Michelle, while she isn't Mary Jane per se, I think the way that they have structured her to show, like, where she shows up in the movie, because she's not constantly around. She really has all these really great zingy one-liners that zip at Peter, and while I think Peter maybe responds to, like, two or three of them. Like, she's constantly shooting them at, and she's always constantly around Peter, and I kind of like the fact that it seems like she's more interested than he is. And I kind of liked that dynamic. And then, at the very end, I feel like John Watts was kind of like, you know what, everybody, fuck you. Mary Jane is a state of being. Anyone can be a Mary Jane. Like, I think that's what he was trying to convey a little bit with Michelle. And, I mean, I don't think this is a big spoiler. You might feel like it is, but there's a one-liner she throws at the end of the movie that, like, literally when it happened, like, 8 people in my theater were like, are you kidding me? And I was like, sit down, be humble, like, shut up, leave it alone. It was great. I think Tom Holland was a great fit for this Spider-Man. Donald Glover's also in this movie. I mean, I'm going to say this to you guys right now, that I've always thought that I thought Donald Glover could have been an amazing Miles Morales. However,
look, we've talked about that multiple times.
We have. And I'm finally going
to... Don't give anything away, because no, it sounds like you're about to give something away. I'm going to be really upset at you.
I'm tucking it into bed, is what I'm going to say. I'm just going to let it take a nap. I'm going to stop bothering it. And whatever happens, happens. But he's in this movie. So when you do see him, you'll be like, yay, and then maybe not so yay. I don't know. It's really kind of up to you. But I was glad to see him in this film. And obviously you saw some Captain America, and you see some Iron Man in there, because he's kind of Iron Man's kind of mentoring Peter, but not really. Like, kind of like that weird absentee father who only shows up to scold you, but then takes credit for all your awesomeness later in life kind of dad. Which, I mean, I guess Peter digs that shit. I don't know. I wouldn't. Get out of my business. Let me do me. But, like, there were some strong notes of vulnerability and strength within that in this origin. And it wasn't just the simple, oh, I got bit by a spider and now I have all these abilities, sort of. It was a different type of origin story. Like, I think it's the origin of Peter wanting to be a hero and wanting to be more, and what that really means. It's not just the moniker and the outfit. It's sacrifice. Above all else, like, you're sacrificing a lot to be this symbol to humanity. And I think when you're a kid, you fetishize what a hero is, because you're seeing the after, but you're not seeing the before and the during. So you think it's all pomp and circumstance and everything just comes naturally, but there's all this gritty stuff that you have to trudge through first before you get that. You got to go through the shit before you get to the pristine, you feel me? And, like, this is, I think this is what the homecoming and the origin for this Spider-Man was. We were seeing all of that in this movie, and it wasn't just the, oh man, I want to be an Avenger, and I have this ability, and you should just throw me into stuff. No, you need to understand that being a hero is not just the big mission. It's all the little things that have the biggest impact on you as a person deciding to be a hero. And, like, it was amazing. And the soundtrack, like, kept me on my feet the whole time. And that's not just because the butt kickers were, like, rumbling my butt every 2.5 seconds. Because, you know, at the IMAX theater around here, they have the butt kickers installed so that you feel fully immersed. And my butt was immersed in Spider-Man.
Well, that's good to know that your butt was immersed
in Spider-Man. Sometimes I'm not. So, like, I don't always like to see movies in IMAX.
See, TV. Like, my thing was that, like, I was going back and forth on whether or not I wanted to find somebody to go see it at the 4K, the 4MX experience. So we have a theater around us.
Don't that they, does like, the, spray random smells at you in those?
Yeah, and the seats move. So, like, so, when, like, you're doing car chases.
Not a problem. Seats... I don't know if I'd be prepared for random smells, though.
Yeah, so it's not so much smells. But they, like, if there's, like, a rain scene, you'll get misted.
See, that seems a little,
like, too, if there's an explosion, there's, like, smoke that goes off. It's, and the seats move. And it's 3D.
I don't have a problem with seats moving. But,
and I feel like for a Spider-Man movie, I might want the 3D in the motion.
Yeah. I don't know if you'd want 4K for that because, you know, he does live in Queens. So, like, there'd probably be some...
Hey, smell. They don't put bad smells because that could make people throw up the food that they just bought. So they don't put bad smells.
But overall,
like, I didn't remember anything smelling when I went to go see. What did I see? I saw something in the 4X experience.
But overall, I like the direction of, you know, not just doing your basic traditional. We've seen it a million times. Origin story. I like how John Watts was really kind of trying to impart on the audience that, you know, origins aren't just, oh, I fell into a tub, like a vat of nuclear thing, and now I glow in the dark. Like, origins can be any beginning in a person and or hero's life. I think it's just easier to throw that type of thought process into a superhero where you've got, you know, a person having to deal with their humanity and then their non-humanity and then having to figure out the balance.
The thing is, Panda, and I was having this conversation the other day with my husband, is that for so many superhero movies, the production team, the writers, the studio feel like they have to do an origin story of, this is how I became the thing I became. And it's always starting at, like, the beginning of time, and I got bit by a radioactive spider, and this is what made me the thing, and now I'm the thing. And then, you know, they get the next two movies, they mess up, and they start to reboot it, and they start again from the beginning of, this is how I became the person, because I got bit by the spider. And you don't need to do that. The origin doesn't have to be the how I got my powers. You can start a movie anywhere, okay? Like, Wonder Woman was great. But Wonder Woman didn't have to start with Diana wanting to be trained as an Amazon and go through the whole Hippolyta thing. Wonder Woman absolutely could have started from the point where Diana was already Wonder Woman, had the gauntlet, had the uniform, and was just in the world. The origin story, to your point, doesn't have to be the how I got my powers. It could be how I started this journey that I'm on. This journey. And whatever journey that is.
Right.
Okay? And I think that I'm getting burnt out on constantly redoing origin stories. Because they're always how I got my powers. Like, I think that's one of the things that I've been so upset with the X-Men movies with, because they keep rebooting themselves and they keep going back to, okay, well, let's start with, you know, how they got their powers and being at the Xavier school. And I don't need that. Okay? I don't need to know how Storm got her powers. Unless you're going to give me a Storm movie with Angela Bassett. At which point...
Oh, man. They showed a trailer for Black Panther. And, like, I could see why our people want to dress to the fucking nines to go to the
I'm dressing. Premiere. Let me be very clear. I'm calling in black to work, and I'm dressing.
Because literally, as the trailer's playing for Black Panther, my husband, because, you know, he's funny, leans over to me and he's like, one, are they using the Empire font from Empire? And I'm like, bitch, you only watched the first season of Empire, so don't even talk to me on that level. But I was like, actually, I think it is. And he's like, I feel like I'd want to wear a really fancy shirt. I'm like, I don't know if I can go to Black Panther with you.
You can, but he should walk behind you.
Like, he could hold
and just
purse.
Throw rose petals in front of where you step.
At my feet. So, like, as I'm watching the Black, I was like, I was getting hyped. I was like, hell yeah. Hi, Michael B. Jordan. I see you.
Oh, dude, I am, like, so hyped for Black Panther. And, like, it was gorgeous. I know I gotta wait till February, but, like, come on, dude.
It will be the best Valentine's Day, Black History Month date.
Oh, it's gonna be the best Black History Month.
Like, they should have that playing and bring back Hidden Figures next year. Like,
if they're smart... Okay, theaters will do that. Like, it'll just be, like, just seriously, you'll have a lot of art houses, you know, Emerson's Theater up here probably will just, it'll just be, like, the blackest Black History Month ever.
All the black,
they'll have Roots, Color Purple.
But overall, though, like, really going back to Homecoming, like, I really liked that We didn't get the Peter Parker bit by a spider learning how to deal, because I mean it's a totally different Spider-Man that they're even working with, and they even made calls to the neighborhood friendly Spider-Man, and this, like, they made hints of those other Spider-Men, which I actually appreciated that they did that. But I mean, this is more of, you know, Peter Parker, you know, being smart and engineering a lot of his devices. Like, yes, he has certain abilities that are heightened and stuff from the power, but it's not, he's not, his webs are not bio, like, they're not made from him, they do not come from him, they come from the gauntlet.
All right, enough of that, I'll say
but I love that the origin was the origin of the hero mentality and the severity of that. That's what the origin was. And I dug that. I truly did. So if you haven't seen it and you weren't thinking about it, strongly suggest that you do. If you do not get nauseous in 3D, I would also say, like, a lot of the shots where he's doing, you know, the Spidey thing are definitely enhanced in 3D. And you will definitely feel like you're on the ride with him when he's soaring through the skies and whatnot. And I mean, Tom Holland should just, like, if we could get cloning done, there should be a Tom Holland in every house.
Tom Holland is a great guy. I respect just how much work he put in, you know, because he was already into parkour before he got the movie. But he did a bunch and had been doing, you know, some aerial work and things like that. But, like, he did a lot of gymnastics and, like, a lot of work to buff up and, you know, did extra dance stuff.
So he get that amazing core for parkour.
So
that
he could. So he did a whole chunk of his own stunt work. And, like, I just tip of the hat to him on that. For doing that. So, I will see the Spider-Man movie at some point. I just don't know when. It may be when it comes to digital. I don't know. But I'm glad to hear that I will more than likely enjoy it. Like, because I've been avoiding my feed every time someone's like, so, Spider-Man. I'm like, whoop. Scroll that feed. Whoop. Scroll that feed.
So.
Because, whoop. Scroll that feed.
It is... I'm looking forward to the next Spider-Man movie and how much more they're now going to expand on that. Like, I have no idea who the next villain for Spider-Man at this stage is going to be. Because I don't think it can go Green Goblin, it could potentially go Doc Ock, but I loved the original Doc Ock from the Sam Raimi movies, but he's quite too old for this, so it'd have to be a younger.
I hated Alfred Molina.
What?
As Doc Ock. I hated that whole movie.
I hated that whole movie. Doc Ock.
I hated
that talking about?
I hated it. Hated it.
To each their own.
Because the motivation for him to be Doc Ock and how quickly he changed at the end of the movie was stupid.
So you're just mad at the end result.
I'm mad at that whole fucking movie.
To each their own, sister. To each
okay.
their own.
You know, exactly. Okay? Like, I love Alfred Molina. I think that he was the perfect pick for Doc Ock, but I think what they did with Doc Ock in that movie was stupid.
So you think they wrote him poorly?
Correct.
All right. So that's
not... Yeah, I don't hate Alfred Molina as Doc Ock. Alfred Molina as Doc Ock was awesome. I hate what they did with Doc Ock in that movie.
Okay.
Because fuck that movie.
All right. But that's all I have to say about Homecoming. I'm really looking forward to seeing the world grow with this particular cast. I think the timing of this couldn't have been any better. And, like, go see it.
Okay, so I've got a little bit of time left. I'm just going to quickly talk about Allison Zeroku. I think I might have mentioned this anime as one that I was going to watch this season when it popped up. Because it's one of, you know, I remember talking about a group of things that I was looking at on Crunchyroll that I was like, based on just their artwork alone, I was going to decide whether to watch them or not. I already gave you the wrap-up of Kado, The Right Answer. Allison Zeroku is another one on Crunchyroll. And it's very interesting. So the Alice they use in the way to play on Alice in Wonderland. So there's this young girl, Alice. She's maybe like 8 or 9. And she has this power. In this world, which is supposedly a normal everyday life, like current today world, there are certain girls who have a power that they call a Dream of Alice. And any girl who has this power can manifest it in different ways. Every Dream of Alice is different. Some people are able to manifest a weapon, a single weapon of one kind. There are twins in this anime that one can create arrows and the other one can create a chain. And so they find, and they're manipulating metal. And so they find ways to combine their powers. It's like sometimes the one that can make a chain will make a big chain that will latch onto the arrow that the other sister fires so that they can cross someplace. Or one will build a motorbike and the other one will build a projectile weapon on the back of the motorbike to help them out. But there's this one special girl who does not have a name at the beginning of the series, whose Alice is quite different. She's able to create life. So most of the other girls with Dreams of Alice can manifest these objects, inanimate objects. But this one can create rabbits and bunnies, and they're real, and some of them can talk, and has manifested this entire universe below this university. The series starts with her trying to make her escape from this facility that she's never been out of. She is successful at getting out, but has never been in the real world, so she doesn't really know about people, and she doesn't really know about, like, money and food and things like that. She ends up in a convenience store looking at all this food and packaging and wanting to eat it desperately because she's hungry, because in order to use the power of your Dream of Alice, you have to basically consume a lot of food because it takes a lot of energy out of you. And she's desperately hungry, but knows that she can't just take the food, but doesn't have any money to buy the food. And she's making this face, and at this time, there's this older gentleman in the convenience store who looks at her, and some stuff goes down. He is Zeroku. And Zeroku is an interesting character because he is very much a traditionalist. So he is very much in the vein of children needing to behave, speaking when spoken to, respecting of elders, respecting of customs, only taking that which you deserve, and so on and so forth. Through some machinations, Alice, in this case, she ends up being called Sana, ends up living with Zeroku. And Zoroku and his granddaughter, who he's taking care of because her parents passed away, basically teach Alice all the things about being a productive member of society. So, like, Zoroku has a rule in the house that she cannot use her Alice power ever. He's a florist, so he teaches her all about caring for flowers, so she learns responsibility, doing tasks on time, consequences for not. It's this very interesting thing because she constantly is coming in contact with other people that have dreams of Alice that are either trying to get her back to the facility or, as you get further into the series, are trying to figure out how they can use her power to their advantage. And always the backdrop is Zoroku. For her, the rock for the world is Zoroku. Whenever she's feeling like she's going, she has this line where she's like, "This makes me flustered." It's interesting how she uses it because it basically means that she's just confused and she doesn't understand. And she doesn't like the feeling of being flustered. And when she's too flustered, her power of Alice goes out of control. And she just starts manifesting things like 50 pigs in the house or whatever. So it's this interesting little series because there's action that's going on and you don't know who has a dream of Alice and who doesn't or how their Alice works or doesn't. But it's really about this little girl figuring out the world, making friends for the first time, and figuring out her spot in her now newly made family that she didn't have before. And I don't want to give it away, but the last three episodes really explore a lot of stuff quickly and start explaining some things quickly. Like, I had to go back and rewatch them because I was like, oh, that's what they meant. Okay, now that makes sense. And then that makes what happens in the next episode even more profound. So if you are interested in an anime that is, I would say, like a medium on like the deep level slice of life with a little fantasy thrown in because of all of the dreams of Alice, magical powers, then you definitely should take a look at Alice and Zoroku. It's very witty in its writing, which you don't typically see or get with that type of anime. Usually there's like one, in most slice of life, there's like one specific story that you're focused on and everyone's kind of like an ancillary character to that. There are multiple stories that you go through in Alice and Zoroku, and that's why I would put it on the medium level of the deepness. Because it gets like in one episode really existential for a hot second and you're like, wait, you do know this is an anime, right? Like, you guys know you're writing for an anime, right? I just want to make sure. Everybody remember? So, I get the whole, you know, magical girl thing, but, like, come on now. I wouldn't put it on, like, the magical level. Oh, it's way God. Below the magical level.
I don't think... It's, I think we still are 2 years out for another series that is as provocative and surreal as Madoka Magical
It's not Madoka level deep. Okay, but it has its moments, and it has its action moments as well. So I really enjoyed it. It's Alice and Zoroku. It's super cute, and like it didn't make me emotional, but like it had a couple moments where it definitely like tugged on the heartstrings for a hot second, which is cute and enjoyable. So there's that. I think those are all the things I wanted to talk about this week. Games Pass. Doomfist, still should have got Terry Crews. The only other thing that was like on my radar, just real quick, is I've seen a lot of people saying a lot of positive things about the Crash Bandicoot trilogy, the Insane trilogy that's come out.
Mm.
I wasn't a huge Crash Bandicoot person.
Neither was I.
Like, I think I played two of them and I didn't complete them. But it's interesting to see how a remastered classic game, because let's face it, Crash Bandicoot is a classic franchise, as much as I don't want to admit it, because when I think retro games and classic games, I think of like stuff from the 70s, so it's really hard for me to think of a game or a series that was out in the 90s as being a classic. Because I don't want to admit that, but it is. It's just interesting to see how a classic game that is remastered well can find such a new, diverse audience. Because, like, there are people that I know that are in my social feeds and whatnot that are talking about playing the game that I know had never played the originals. Because they wasn't...
I didn't play them.
Yeah. I only played two. I played the first Bandicoot game through emulation, actually, on my Mac. And then I played another one when I actually got my PS3, because I got a disc version, a PS2 disc version. Because my PS3 was the fatty, so it could play the PlayStation 2 games. But it's just interesting to see, you know, the marketing behind it, and it do so well. And I think that that has a bit more to do with people our age picking it up to introduce maybe their kids to it. And that's like a sad realization for me. Because I was like, it's probably that. It's probably people my age buying it and introducing their kids to it. And I feel old. So I myself haven't played the Insane Trilogy. I don't think that I will. But I do think that it's big ups for Naughty Dog. Like, just come out with a really good Last of Us 2 now. That's really all I need. So if you could give me a ship date on that, that would be great. I know you got your Bandicoot out of the way now. Because after that level in Uncharted, everyone was like, Bandicoot! Okay, it's done. Everybody focus now. And when is Last of Us 2 ship? Because I'm also going to call in Black that day too.
Of course you are.
I'm just saying, like, that's happening. When Last of Us 2 comes out, I am going to complete that in a 48-hour run. Because I got to get through the story. So, I will be calling out to play Last of Us 2. Because there's only certain games now, really, in all honesty, that I am hyped up to play on my PlayStation. God of War and Last of Us 2. Like, those are the big ones for me for my PlayStation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Last of Us 2 gives me shivers just thinking about it.
Oh, and just one last thing really quickly, just in case you weren't paying attention, because I know you were a little bit busy this week, Panda, and I know you guys listening were a bit busy this week. Cuphead is going to be Xbox One and PC exclusive. So, just in case you thought you were going to get to play Cuphead on a bunch of stuff, no. You're going to need an Xbox or a PC to play Cuphead.
Okay.
Future Cuphead games, the developer said that they're open to going to other platforms, but Cuphead's just going to be on Xbox. And to that I say, it's about time that Xbox had an exclusive that wasn't Gears or Halo.
That would be nice. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. Now, if Anthem was console exclusive, that could be a game changer. So anyway, that's what I got for this week. If you guys have any thoughts or anything that you want to share with us about the stuff we talked about this week, or you just enjoyed the podcast, make sure that you subscribe to our podcast so you get our brand new episodes as soon as we put them out. You can get them on iTunes, either on the desktop or through the podcast application by searching for The Eshcast and subscribing. That'll make sure that you get our brand new episodes as soon as we make them available. You can also get our podcast through our site, electricsisterhood.com. Links are right on the homepage on the right-hand side. You can also listen to our podcast on vognetwork.com, on Stitcher Radio, on Google Play, pretty much where any place where fine podcasts can be found, you can find The Eshcast. So please subscribe, leave us a review, let us know what you think about the show. We love your feedback and we love getting your feedback, so please keep it coming. Also, be sure that if you're checking out us, that you check out our website. Like I said, electricsisterhood.com. We have a lot of news and reviews that we share on the site every week. So bookmark us, check out our feeds, put us into your favorite feed reader, however you want to consume the content. We don't care. Just consume it, share, and comment. Let us know what you thought about it. If there's something that you want us to check out, you can hit us up on our social at ESH News on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook.com/Land of Esh on the Facebooks. Leave us a comment. Let us know if there's a game you want us to check out and review, or an anime series that you want us to check out and review, or a manga or a movie. I mean, you can just be requesting stuff all the time. We appreciate it when you let us know what it is that you're interested in getting our opinions on. So hit us up and let us know what you want us to check out. And if we do, we'll give you a shout out on the podcast as being the person that recommended it to us. If you enjoy what we do here in the Land of Esh, then please make sure that you check out all of our great contributor sites and bookmark them. Check out their shows and what they're doing. That's b3crew.com, held down by our homie, King Baby Duck. No Borders, No Race podcast goes out weekly. If it's indie, if it's good, KBD is spinning it on his show, teaching it a little bit of Japanese, and also telling you all about great indie music. J-pop, K-pop, rock, you name it, anime, manga, video games. You'll find all kinds of great stuff over at b3crew.com. So please make sure that you check out the site, bookmark them, and check out the show. For Wednesday evenings at 9 Eastern, our homie Hamsterman2049 streams live on Twitch, new games and old games, never the same games. Make sure that you check him out, be part of chat. Like I said, 9 Eastern, you can get the link right on our Facebook page. So make sure that you check it out and also check out SmashRook.com. Our homie, the one who does the best show reviews that I have ever watched on YouTube, Phil the Issues Guy at IssuesProgram.com with his review show on YouTube that you absolutely need to check out. Phil's recap and review is absolutely fantastic. I love his recaps. You can call in live, be part of chat as he does the recaps. You definitely need to check him out. And last but certainly not least, our homies over at nerdcrave.com, giving you the stuff that nerds crave: anime, manga, comic books, video games, movies, you name it. If it's nerdy, they're covering it. Definitely make sure check out nerdcrave.com. Bookmark all these sites, folks. They're absolutely fantastic. I love everything that the team does and is doing in the space, and I hope that you'll enjoy it as well. So check out our sites, bookmark our stuff, hit us up on social, let us know what it is that you want us to check out and check into, and we will, because we do this because we enjoy doing it for us and for you. So with that, I'm going to call this podcast a wrap. I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time,
see you later.
Titties.